Blinding sun, deceptive moon, and consuming shadows. Many secrets are held beyond the sight of humanity. Wondrous and dangerous, the mysteries of Dearstan leave no one unchanged. The bold crew roleplayers are pleased to welcome you into that perilous liminality between the mundane, the unknown, and the unknowable. Whispers from Beyond is a Mage the Awakening Chronicle following the journey of Emily Tao, played by Craig. I'm Bill, and I will be your storyteller for this dive into the mysteries of Dearstan. Hello, and welcome back to Emily's Adventures in Magic.
No, not our actual title, but such an apt description.
When we last left off, Emily had gone through Stygia, awakened as a mage, and then had herself shunted backwards several hours in time to hide the event from prying eyes and horrible monstrosities from perhaps the deep, the beyond, who knows? They were weird and clacky and lobster-like and should not have known. Not only did that make sure that they never experienced the point in time when she awakened to become aware of her, but it allowed her to save a life. Emily, you've had to go through a lot since then. You had to get introduced to Mage Society. You had to get yourself a bit of a mentor and a teacher. You had to learn a lot. Before we go into all the details of that, how do you think all this was for Emily?
Well, I'd love to say that she pulled through and, you know, chip herself she is. But, like, I honestly think it's a bit of a struggle for her. And I know Jessica asked me to pick up some Red Bull on the way home, but I'm not sure if I was in the right headspace to do it. Is there, like, a willpower roll I can see if I actually did that?
Wits and composure, yeah.
Alrighty. Am I doing this right? Should have really grabbed the roll from earlier.
We were having a little trouble with the dice spot last time and switched to plastic.
That's a difficulty 8.
Correct, sir. All the rolls are, and no penalties on... actually, one die penalty on this because you did have a bit of a rough time. But it also was a time that technically ends up refreshing your willpower at the end of it. So it's very, you know, much this high of success as much as anything else, too.
Oh, that's 3 successes, then.
You can definitely remember the Red Bull for Jessica.
So I'm, like coming back all the way from the train station, and I'm almost home, and then I'm like, whoop, with the steering wheel, and like, I'm totally gonna pick it up. Swing by a gas station or something on the way back. Like, that was very important to Emily because I did have be a better roommate as an aspiration. So I just wanted to see if that was even possible for me to be in the right headspace. I probably have one of those, like, You look like you do need Red Bull looks from the clerk, though, picking it up, though.
All right. And remember, when you're following through on your aspirations, that's the kind of thing that helps your character. So that is a beat. It's not going to be a beat for every little small kindness, but it's going to be a beat this time because it's literally you came out the door remembering this.
I wrote it down like pick up Red Bull. I'm like, what the hell does this mean? Next to all this other really important stuff that I took notes on. But yeah, so I think she, had a really tough time getting to grips with it. Probably like went home and just like slept the entire day, right? Probably didn't wake up until the evening on Saturday, and then just spent like a lot of the next few days just trying to figure out am I doing okay? Probably like call in check up with my mom, just like. Yeah, just feeling weird. Just trying to get grounded again.
All right. The time with family is good. Jessica is very surprised when she briefly comes out of her room, sees you as you're blearily coming in, closing the door behind you, holding not just one Red Bull, but a small box. Her eyes light up. She runs over, thanks you, makes a very small little let's keep the noise down kind of thing. And then goes back into her room with a slight exaggerated silence as she closes the door.
I nod a bunch and just kind of like collapse on the bed and probably just keep sleeping.
Yeah. Next day or two are relatively quiet, but you do find a envelope of all the weird places blown up by the wind against your window with just your first name written on it.
I think it's kind of weird, but it might be some like weird marketing scam or piece of junk mail. So I kind of just like open it up and probably like I just consider it a little bit and then just check it on my desk or something.
Oh, it's not a scam when you open it up. You notice it's written in very nice, careful handwriting and addressed to you with a couple specific references, even in the first paragraph, to the exciting events of Friday night, which only you might remember, inviting you to meet up later, discuss them, and be able to meet some people who will help you out with your training. And it is, in fact, signed Oathkeeper, a name you very well remember as someone who could turn back the hands of time.
Yeah, I probably get like halfway through it, just thinking it's like some sort of like event at the student union before like having to start over again. And then I get to Oathkeeper at the end. I'm like, no way. And probably half thinking I dreamt part of that night, or maybe like imagine something to cover up some sort of trauma I had. But I do remember, you know, dropping off Amanda and all that. And I think this is like Emily's mind kind of reasserting that, no, this did actually happen to her again after like just spending the entire day recovering. And I'm like reading over the details, like where and when am I being asked to meet?
All right. You are actually being asked to meet at a, of all the strange kinds of places, like a 24-hour pancake house a little bit south of the city.
So I probably know it. It's probably like just, is it Paul Bunyan themed?
Oh, it very much is. Yes, it is a lumberjack themed place.
Yeah, I've probably eaten there a few times before. So I'm like, oh yeah, I can go for some pancakes. When is this?
Tomorrow for breakfast.
Oh, excellent. And I'm kind of like reading this note and like kind of walking around the apartment, like thinking I'm probably still really hungry. Maybe reheating some of the leftover food that grandma sent me or something, and just kind of like probably wondering aloud, what do I even wear to this sort of thing?
It doesn't specify a dress code at all. It is a pretty short letter and did say something along the lines of, you have my number from the station in case you forgot, which makes you feel like maybe you didn't end up texting that number and should have, or something like that. But you've been pretty recovering. It was a very big day. And now it feels like everywhere you look, there are tiny little bits of signs and portents about the world itself.
Yeah, I got to check my phone because I've probably just been ignoring it for like the past 2 days. Maybe I like find it and I might need my pillow and have to plug it in or something.
Yeah, your phone is there. You'd put her number in. You didn't actually give her your number at the time.
Oh, yeah. I think I made a big deal of, like, you know, I did call a number, but I probably just didn't save it. I don't think Emily gets it, really saves people's numbers, even when she's known them for a while. One of those people who just, like, remembers based on, like, the text conversation whose number it is and has to go look it up, and it's really bad at updating contacts. So maybe she does say, oh, yeah, I did call this number. And then, like, maybe I'll just find that and, like, text back, hey, got your note, smiley face.
Excellent. You'll get a text back. Good. Will you be able to make it? Breakfast is on the house.
So this would be Sunday morning. Absolutely, and like probably have way too many exclamation marks because, you know, Emily is excited. Like, she doesn't have many friends. So, like, despite being like young, chipper, and helpful and friendly, like, doesn't really have a whole lot of close friends.
But when you get there, you do end up seeing a table actually that you are brought to by the waitress. Off in the back corner, it looks like it's the kind of place that has a couple rooms to it, you know? The front room is always open, and then when they start having too big of a crowd or something, they open up a back room afterwards and so on, like that.
Yeah, like maybe they also use this for like kids' birthday parties or something.
Exactly. So you get brought around to the side, off to a back room, and then you notice a curtain in the wall that you'd never noticed before. And behind that curtain, there is a second back room. And this one actually has slightly nicer quality tables than the rest. That everything is, instead of the, you know, standard for micro countertops and so on like that, actually nice wood tables, paneled walls. It looks, instead of a modern diner, it looks more like a very high-end 1800s kind of restaurant instead, feeling to it.
Like, the light looks a lot more like it's from actual candles rather than fluorescence.
Old Edison bulbs, actually. Late 1800s.
Interesting. So, yeah, I shuffle in there wearing my like jeans and my Bangor Community College hoodie.
Yeah, and she's off in a corner, actually dressed up in closer to business casual, not quite Sunday best, you know. One of those suit dress kind of things. But not like the I'm in the high powered lawyer's office level suit dress, but in the I might end up having to go to something vaguely formal later today and I'm not wearing two sets of clothes kind of suit dress level instead.
I think I'll just go right up, sit down, and say, oh, dang it, I knew I underdressed for this. Hi.
No, don't worry about it. It's me. I have a lot of responsibilities, and I know that a lot of people younger than me don't have to worry about this stuff, but I have to deal with a number of people who take formality far more seriously. Don't hold one ceremony. This is an informal meeting.
Oh, good. And then I kind of like start looking around and like taking in the place a little bit more. Is this like a new part? I've never been back here before.
It's hidden from eyes that have never opened.
Oh. I guess that makes sense. And she's kind of considering like the full implication of what she said.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a lot of questions, and I'll be able to help you with some. But mostly, I want to make sure that we can get you a proper mentor. Someone who has both the time and the correct understanding to teach you about the paths you now walk on.
And Emily like kind of bites her lower lip, thinking like, in a similar way, this kind of reminds her of like meetings with guidance counselors about the importance of picking a good major and like getting good financial aid, because that's probably like some of the most important things that she had to do so far in her life. And she's like, yeah, that sounds very like a very good idea.
Let me put it this way. You went through Stygia, basically the equivalent of the underworld. You almost died, or in some ways did die and come back. Someone who hasn't gone through the same or similar experience is not in any way qualified to teach you about the first steps of understanding the magic that you now have the potential to master.
And she's kind of nodding along, not like she knows what she's gone through, and like still kind of like thinks like, yeah, maybe she did experience something, but like it was probably some sort of hallucination, and how much of it was just like dream symbolism. And yeah, maybe I don't think she'd like think she's like getting recruited by a cult, but maybe it's some sort of like scholarly academic society in all this, because like any sort of magic that Emily's done so far has been at least in her like unawakened rational mind, like a dream magic, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have that initial bit of instinctive understanding towards death magic and matter magic, but it's not, you know, obviously this equivalent of having gotten to play with it very much. It's only been a little over a day, and you did not, as you said, spend that day trying to recreate anything that you did.
No, like her primate rational brain is fighting with the awakened mind, and she's open to all this, or else she wouldn't be here. But like, she's like, maybe I can do something, but now that I'm not dreaming anymore, I'm probably a little bit skeptical. But at least like, she saved Amanda, and that counts for something. Maybe it's these people will help her do more things like that.
Let's keep it on. Says, I want to remind you something we spoke about yesterday. Your name is now a secret name. You really don't want to go around telling anyone in the more supernatural communities that you are Emily, especially not your full name to them. Names have power.
Did she say my name? Because I thought she said she didn't want to know it earlier.
You said it to Amanda in the train station, if I remember.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I think you probably would have accidentally let it slip.
She totally would. She'd be basically, hi, I'm Emily Elizabeth, and this is Clipper, my big red dog. Probably everyone. And then, like...
Or
like,
if nothing else, Amanda would have said, thank you, Emily.
Yeah, after like that long car ride, I probably would have said something. But yeah, I probably like remember now that she reminds me, I'm like, oh crap, I probably shouldn't have said that. And then like she bites her lip and like gives like a look of, yes, I get, I should be more silent, please. Like, I trust you can keep a secret.
I'm very good at keeping secrets and promises, as you can guess by the title.
Yeah, with that kind of name, I mean, I suppose one doesn't take a name like that lightly.
No. And whatever name you start to call yourself by, be warned, you will find yourself living up to it and being changed by it, in all likelihood.
Okay. And she's me, Craig, the character, has a name picked out, but Emily probably hasn't given it like any thought, but she nods.
So for anyone else we introduce you to, at least for now, we'll just have them call you Apprentice or The Apprentice, unless you're choosing to train under them directly, in which case negotiate that as you will, until you've chosen your actual shadow name to work the craft under.
That sounds appropriate. So, are other people meeting here? Should I order something? How does the rest of this thing work?
Well, they promised me a couple minutes to talk to you and make sure you were comfortable before we had a waiter come in for breakfast, especially to make sure that none of the name things accidentally happened. The owner is actually going to be serving us today.
Oh, that's awfully nice of them.
He is one of the five counselors. A mage of each path, Moros, the mages who've gone to Stygia, like you being one of those paths. We have one from each path representing each of our five orders that make the council of mages over this general geographical area. I happen to be the head of that council, the hierarch. Yes, as in the person in charge of the hierarchy.
Wow, that's impressive. Congratulations.
Thank you. I got it in part because I am very good at keeping my promises and making sure promises are kept. That's a very important thing in any leader of any capacity.
Yeah, if only all politicians could be so trustworthy. And she kind of smiles a little bit.
The keeper laughs a little bit and said, there's more than one among us who, for various reasons, do take oaths of honesty. But honesty and openness are not the same thing. Be careful with that.
I nod. I appreciate all the stuff you did for me and, you know, like Amanda too.
Sometimes it's important to just do the right thing. But in your case, I will eventually, and not unfairly, collect on the three favors.
Okay. I mean, if you need like an airport ride, I'm your girl, but I'm sure whatever you think is appropriate is fair payment. You've done a lot for me.
She nods, and at that point in time, a very, very tall man walks into the room. Yes, he's wearing flannel. No, he is not actually carrying an axe at this moment, but his head is brushing the ceiling. You have this feeling that his head would brush the ceiling of any room he walked into, no matter what. And he looks down at you here in the back of the Pancake Palace in the mahogany chamber and says, "Well, I know what one of our guests tends to be fond of. Young lady, are you fond of flapjacks?"
"Boy, am I ever. And coffee too, please."
"Bacon?"
"Yeah, you bet." And she's really excited because this guy is super tall and a little intimidated, but she's just also very excited to meet someone kind of unusual who seems pretty friendly.
"Good to hear it," he says. And you notice his name tag, in fact, does say Paul Bunyan on it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Emily thinks it's part of the gig for running this place to pick that name, but like, I don't think she would have quite equated that, like, that's his mage name or something.
He then reaches out a hand to you and says, "I'm also the Thyrsus counselor."
"I'm the apprentice." And she smiles because she's excited because she actually remembered not to give herself away.
A good place to start out. Everyone does once upon a time. And when he shakes your hand, his hand certainly envelops your entire hand. It feels like it could go almost up your wrist halfway.
I eventually free myself from it and I say, "Oh, this is a great place. I used to come here with my parents all the time."
"And you continue to be welcome." He smiles at you and then backs off the booth.
I look at Oathkeeper. "Well, that went well."
Paul's known for being an extremely fair man. He's also very fond of new mages. Most of them haven't had a chance to do something foolish or annoying yet, which is always a great place to start off.
"I mean, I'm sure people make mistakes all the time."
"Very fair way to put it. So, there are 5 different orders, and among them, that there was toddler banging on the door in the hallway." "Was that so? There are 5 different orders, and we're going to help you find a mentor from one of them. Now, more than one will probably want to offer you membership, but you should understand roughly what you're getting into in advance."
I nod. "Is that the same thing as a Stygia?"
"No. Stygia is where the Supernal Realm, part of the truth behind the truth that underlies all the world that you went through when you awakened. That's a path. There are 5 different paths to that truth, but there's also 5 different orders that make up our society, and the two are separate things."
"So I want a teacher who has walked that same path as me, so I know where to go in the future."
"Exactly, and the orders effectively are philosophies, but also to an extent, responsibilities as well."
"Okay. Where do we begin?"
"I'll tell you about them. My own, I'm a member of the Silver Ladder. We specialize in enlightenment and understanding through basically social orders and systems, and work on helping people to awaken as individuals and guide from behind the scenes to help society, because we can't exactly practice magic openly. It's dangerous for a great many reasons. The Guardians of the Veil protect those reasons. They help make sure that people don't cause horrible dangers with their magic, which can invite
paradox in the abyss, basically a reality negating force that can strike out when people reach too far or are careless and irresponsible. The adamantine arrow study their enlightenment through conflict, and our soldiers, protectors, guardians. The Mysterium, well, they are our scholars. They more than anyone else research the mysteries of the magical world and use that research to further their enlightenment most. And last is the Free Council, who looks for ways to effectively awaken as many people as possible. They're the youngest of the orders and tend to be slightly more dangerous than the others for that reason, but they are good people. They just have very broad reaching goals. All of us do in certain senses, but theirs, I personally think, are slightly riskier than others. Again, I still feel that they're good people, so don't take that as a disincentive.
So am I supposed to choose one, or does one choose me?
Because I was the one who met you first, along with our morals counselor, Angonor, actually, I'm going to be able to let you choose who we introduce you to as possible mentors and try to make this go your way. I, frankly, don't have anything to gain from being partisan on this, because I took an oath to not be overly partisan as taking this office, which is why people trust me in it.
And I think I do trust her, because, like, I don't know very much about Oathkeeper, but everything has been, like, fair, upfront, and truthful with all my interactions with her, and I feel like Emily feels inclined to trust her, like, for no other reason than she says she's trustworthy.
And if any of those groups sound interesting, I can make sure to make proper introductions for you. Technically, I can introduce you to more than one, and you can hear more about them from their members or answer questions you have right now. But there are at least one or two qualified individuals who may or may not be at this moment willing to take an apprentice across all of them.
I nod. And out of character, I have picked an order already. Not sure how Emily would react to any of them. So, or by picking, as far as game mechanics go, am I supposed to have a mentor of my own order?
Ideally, you have a mentor who's of the same path as you.
Mm-hmm.
And it would also be someone in the order you're in, because you're kind of getting to learn some of their secrets as being trained by them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't exactly have your primary teacher be from a group that you're not in, because mm-hmm. they'd expect you to join.
Yeah. Okay. So I think Emily would ask a lot of questions about all of them, because she's naturally curious, and like the whole Silver Ladder and Guardians of the Veil seem like almost natural fits for her, because they're all about helping people. I think she's kind of feeling like a little like the adamantine arrow is a little bit too martial for her. She's not a very physical person, and like thinks it's probably great that those type of people exist. I think that the Mysterium really plays into her vice of curiosity, and like as much of a fit that she thinks she'd be for one of the first two, like she's like really curious about like uncovering the mysteries of the universe. And when she was in Stygia, she was always like asking questions whenever she could, trying to understand the problem set in front of her, and saw the whole thing as a puzzle rather than like it had a very positive outlook on things, rather than just being dreadful the whole time. Like the part of herself that she let go. And I think she kind of shares like Oathkeeper's like intrepidations, or and wariness of some members of the Free Council. Maybe, like, I'm not sure if she would have come to the same conclusion without Oathkeeper and her opinions coloring it, but, like, maybe that it seems kind of, like, irresponsible to just waken any and everybody. So that's kind of what Emily's thinking about all these.
All right. An Oathkeeper will be able to introduce you to people in the other orders besides simply herself as well. And given that that means probably meeting 3 or 5 or half a dozen mages at least, we can gloss over that a little bit and get down to the one that we, between these sessions, did select as your new mentor. That's all right with you?
Yeah, and I think Emily is, like, you know, very open and hearing each of these possible teachers out, you know, asking questions when appropriate and trying just very hard not to seem like overly like wanting to jump into this head first, because she thinks, like, she's remembering what Oathkeeper said about Paul Bunyan liking people who don't do stupid stuff. So she's just trying to, like, basically do her best, like, job interview right now, because that's kind of what this is for her.
Yeah. I mean, with your willingness to meet people today, she makes a small point of clearing a couple more hours of her day than she'd originally planned, and trying to arrange a few of those meetings to happen in the evening as well. So you're actually able to come back here for another free dinner, and the stacks of pancakes and so on are quite huge. Like, you have leftovers, and apparently that's just fine, and you probably need them anyway, being that busy student that you are, kind of attitude from Paul.
And Jessica's going to be thrilled. I got breakfast for, like, the next week, assuming they're good that long. I don't know.
Depends on how much you like reheating pancakes, but yes.
Yeah, college students. Yeah. So, yeah, the idea is, like, I'd meet back here in the evening, seeing that it is going to be a job interview, basically. I think she's going to ask Jessica's help in picking out an outfit, because, I, you know, meeting someone for breakfast who you met before is different than basically, like, you know, interviewing for a position as, like, an apprentice, or, you know, at least in her mind, she should, you know, wear something other than grubby jeans and a unwashed sweatshirt.
Yeah, Jessica's glad to help you out, especially because you brought back lunch for her on top of having gotten the Red Bull yesterday. So she's going to go through her closet with you as well as your closet when you're having a hard time figuring out what you really want to wear and how to look seriously professional, and ends up pulling together a pretty reasonable outfit for you that also isn't horribly uncomfortable for October. Maybe like the 1st of November now.
Emily knows that she shouldn't wear old jeans and a grubby sweatshirt, but she's also doesn't want to, like, wear, like, anything, like, too, like, slinky or anything that's not really her. But yeah, she doesn't really know how to dress professionally. So I don't know, maybe she finds, like, I feel like my roommate's the same size as me, so maybe I borrow a pantsuit or something.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of her clothes are even more party than your clothes, but if she takes some of her stuff and some of your stuff and combines them with you, and the two of you debate things out a little bit, and then you remember that you had that big paycheck from last night for the ride, and the moment you mention that, she says, "We're going to a store and getting you something nice to wear," you end up coming out of it with, like, a genuinely professional, nice outfit to show up in.
And I drained my Clifford stash, but...
Oh, not all of it. She gave you way too much money, as you remember.
I know, but clothes are expensive.
Clothes definitely can be expensive, yes.
right. So I got some maybe a black pinstripe pantsuit with like the flared white collar underneath it or something. You know, sensible shoes. Maybe put my hair back in a ponytail or something. It's important.
Just quite entertained to help you out with like the hair and the makeup and everything for tonight. I mean, it's what you do. Your roommates.
Yeah, I'm like looking. I'm like, oh, okay, I look like not a college student Uber driver, which, you know, first impressions mean a lot.
So where is this shot with anyway? She asks.
Oh, it's kind of like this apprenticeship sort of position. I'm going to be learning from some people associated with the college, and like it's vague on whether it's paid or not, but I had the potential to turn it into a full-time thing maybe. And I'm kind of just like talking around the fact that I don't really know a whole lot about it, but I'm really super excited about it.
Because no, when you're vague, she just kind of nods and smiles, because you know that she tends to be pretty vague on her job on the side as well.
Oh, she's a professional streamer.
Exactly.
Video games and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just like trying to, you know, I'm excited about it, Jess. It's, you know, like people don't tend to take me seriously.
I mean, it sounds almost like consulting work, and consultants can charge almost anything if you're giving the right people advice.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe it'll help me decide what I want to be the rest of my life or something. I don't know. I don't think I want to do community college forever, obviously, but maybe I can figure out what my next step is. Who knows? They always say practical experience is good, right?
Oh yeah. You can't get anything better on the resume. So you head back to the Pancake Palace?
Yep. Feeling pretty confident.
Yeah. Back in the mahogany room, and there are about 7 or 8 more different mages who are in there. I'm not going to try and pull all of them by name right now, because you'll probably forget, and we want to give them the screen time that they'll be due when they start being far more relevant. But you do start connect with one of them over the course of the evening. And that one happens to be a Mysterium mage. Believe, unless I'm suddenly forgetting something that we agreed on, his name was Yamaduta, which basically fits, because he too has worked in a sense as a messenger for the beyond and is a man of Indian descent, which in some ways feels a little more at home because your ancestors also came from Southern Asia.
Could you spell that name out? I got the Yama part, but...
Yamaduta.
Is that one word or two?
One word. Because you have time in Google, you'd be able to find out that it's literally a reference to Yama's messengers from Hindu mythology. They only show up in a very small number of myths, but they basically act as guides to help souls get to the afterlife. Not like killing machines, but more like, you know, very much like guides.
Yeah, I mean, I think that feels like a good fit for Emily, because that's basically what she was doing her entire psychedelic dream journey anyways, was being Amanda's guide and then later savior. But the saving part kind of seemed like added on at the end, and like, yeah. I think they really get to talking about Emily's experience in Stygia a lot, because, you know, that seems like a defining moment for her.
Yeah. And you actually do meet one other mage there who will come up again from the Silver Ladder, a different Moros, who apparently does have a little bit of conflict, you can already tell, with Yamaduta. It's not completely hidden, but they are very polite to each other. Lango Lacuzino. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong because it's in Zulu, and I'm not, or Swahili, sorry, and I'm not very good at pronouncing Swahili at all.
Yeah, and, you know, Emily has empathy up pretty high. Like, she has three dots in it, so she's probably picking up the sense of that they're like professional rivals of some sort.
Yeah. They both talk a little bit about philosophy, basically. And it seems like they, if they were getting into it, have a lot of philosophical disagreements, but not a huge number of ethical disagreements.
So what's like Yamaduda's like philosophy on being a mage in magic? Because it seems like an interview question that the candidate is supposed to ask.
He seems to be very, very certain that there's a lot of responsibility to the community, as well as to discovering of secrets. Because as a mage, you are going to be in the position to very regularly discover things that many people don't know. And a lot of the times you will have to hide them because that knowledge is not something that is safe for many people to know. The average person really shouldn't be contacting the dead because it could be very easy for them to accidentally get the power and attention of some kind of a truly mighty ghost who might cause a lot of trouble or something along those lines, you know? It's easy to be irresponsible, and it's hard to make good choices.
And I think that really helps bridge the gap for Emily between, like, you know, choosing the Mysterium versus like the Guardians or the Silver Ladder, because like that seems like a good like middle ground to her, and she's trying really hard not to just be like someone who fucks up on this sort of thing. Although out of character, she probably will and should a lot. But like in theory, this sounds like something Emily would be on board with.
Yeah. The big difference between the two mages seems to be that Yamaduta says outright to you that he believes that while ghosts are not people, they are still echoes of people that need compassion. And Rongo believes that they are echoes of people and not people. They are more of things.
And Emily would definitely talk about her experience, like separating the permanent from the temporary, and how the permanent was definitely a people to her, not knowing if that's the same as a ghost or a spirit, but. Yeah, brings up the fact that she's super curious about what it actually is. It means to, you know, kind of talk about her obsession a little bit.
They would actually say that that is a little bit different from a normal ghost, because ghosts get created when people die as echoes of it, effectively. And not even when everyone dies.
Okay.
Neither of them disagree with on that part.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know, like, I think maybe, like, this is one of the later interviews that she has done and has, you know, kind of picked up things from the various other, like, meetings that she had. And, but this one feels a little different. And I guess, like, I asked, like, so how does this work, this whole mentor, protege, apprentice thing?
Well, I'm responsible for making sure that you have the understanding and knowledge to both be safe in your power, to be a trustable and respectable member of our society. And while I am teaching you, I am to an extent at your disposal for your questions and issues, but you are also at mine for things that I need done from time to time. What I would ask of you will not be unfair things, and they will likely be things that teach you, but they are things that would be inefficient uses of my time and good uses of yours.
And she, I sort of nod, and like in my head, it's sticking out that he uses like presence, not like a subjective, like would be. he's already talking like, you are my apprentice, and these are things I'm doing for you. These are things that you do for me, not would be or will be or could be. And I think that's a distinction that, like, this particular mentor, Yamaduta, used and no one else used. And that's really sticking out for Emily.
Yeah. He's not the only one who was positive towards you. A couple did say, like I said, we're not mentioning all of them, bring them back, that they didn't think you would be a good fit for them. They thought you would just end up arguing too much and it wouldn't be productive for either of you. But they said so in a relatively polite and politic way. But he certainly did not during all of this. So that could also be another factor.
Yeah.
We'll bring up those other mages if it becomes interesting or you want to at some later point.
Yeah. Yeah, just like maybe the future of Renan. Oh, you know this person because you interviewed with them or something.
Exactly. I just want to make sure I've left that window open.
Definitely. Wide open. Yeah. And like, I don't know if, like, I don't think she would bring a notepad or anything to all this because, like, this seems like the stuff you shouldn't be just writing down for everyone to find, but absorbing it into your mind, this sort of thing. And I think she wants to, like, kind of just take in the experience and make, like, a gut decision rather than, like, plan it out because she's not really much of an organized planner. So she's not like writing all this stuff down. She's just kind of there to be present.
That's fair. And I think that that will definitely play a part in how your decision ended up going in the end and why you ended up choosing him out of the other couple options who basically you ended up going into last round interviews with as well.
Yeah. So like is Oathkeeper back for this part?
Oathkeeper made sure that she was around to introduce you to people and then offered to be there in any of the times you wanted as a neutral intermediary.
Yeah.
Especially if you were in a position where you might be meeting with more than one at a time to make sure that nobody would be pressuring you too much.
Right. And I think Emily is okay with going solo. I think at the end she's maybe like wondering, so how does this work? How do I just like submit applications to them all? Because she's like applied to college was like the one thing that she's done in her life. So that's like the lens she's looking through.
Yeah, the direction you get in advance on that one will be pretty much the you should ask them. If not, they might ask you. And if you're the one asking, there's a lot less social pressure from them turning you down than if one of them asks you and you turn them down.
Like, how long do I have to make a decision? Should this be a tonight thing that I announce it? Do I need to, like, wait for a response back?
I would just advise that, you know, after having met with somebody at most 3 times, you know, ask them directly. And then they will tell the others, or you could take up the reins and tell the others yourself that you'll become their apprentice. And I think they'll respect you more for having told them yourself.
Okay. So I over the course of several weeks or so, I, you know, have second and third interviews with a few people.
Yeah, some people you ask back, they, like I said, they don't all say that they don't all think it's going to work out because of whatever reasons they have. Mm-hmm. But none of them are unreasonable about it. No one is immediately trying to create a conflict with someone they might need to work with later on. And a few of them actually ask you back whether or not you plan on going with them.
Yeah. And like, maybe I feel like I'm in contact with Oathkeeper via text between some of these interviews, like say like, well, I should at least go and get more information sort of thing, even if I'm not interested.
Exactly. And I have a feeling that after this, of course, your contact with her is going to become a lot more distant.
Mm-hmm.
But you can feel like, to an extent, this is the kindness she puts in because you're a new person, despite mm-hmm. the fact that she has a lot of responsibilities.
And
unless you start trying to like get her as a contact or an ally in the future, it's going to be more distant afterwards, but still polite.
Emily has three dots in empathy. She knows about how to far to push it with people, I think. So like she's trying not to, like, you know, every time she going forward now, she's recognizing that I'm picking a mentor who's now going to be, you know, having to answer and deal with some of these questions directly. I should probably not be relying on, like, the, what was her title? The Grand Counselor, like, basically
the hierarch. Yeah.
Yeah. The hierarch,
the equivalent of like your mayor or governor type, whatever for the area.
I should work with my career advisor, not the dean of the college.
That's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, technically the other mage you met her with mm-hmm. before, Angano, as the head Moros in the Consilium, is also technically someone who is supposed to be a resource to you to an extent.
What was that person's name again?
Anganor. Anginor.
Yeah, I remember it was a really difficult to remember names, so it just went right over my head.
Yeah, it's an obscure enough reference, but I'm sure some people will get it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I think at the, like, after the second or third round of interviews, so I'm maybe at the apartment with Jess. I'm like, so I'm supposed to, like, pick a mentor for this company? And I don't know. It feels like I'm supposed to be doing the asking. I don't know. Like, I don't know. This feels all very junior prom to me. Do I like get him a gift or a card or?
Go with the one who's going to probably not ask anything unreasonable from you.
Yeah, but how do I ask him? Do I just, it almost feels like I'm proposing or something.
What kind of consulting is this? Just go really simple and direct. You got to lay out your boundaries and things very clear from the beginning, or men, if it's a man, they'll walk right over you if you don't give them a firm boundary from the start.
Yeah, and I bring up how it's been like a very blind interview process. Like they're not supposed to know a whole lot about me until after I pick up the job, sort of thing. Like this organization's really big into like diversity hires and kind of bringing that in about, like, they're trying to, you know, not self-select or anything. And, you know, probably like, oh, that's pretty progressive reactions out of her. But I feel like Emily should, you know, have her name set and like, hey, this is who I am as a wizard mage person going forward. Not, hi, I'm the apprentice. She feels that making a good impression would be like, hi, or hello again. This is my mage name. I would like you to be my mentor, sort of thing. Like just being straight up with showing that initiative of taking all those things that Oathbreaker had told her and all the other people about, like, you know, making my identity out. And I don't know, maybe she thinks it'd be some sort of like sign of maturity.
Oathbreaker would be a really bad name to go by.
No, I'm saying that she would appreciate. Yes,
that is definitely correct. That going by with that choice would be a good start.
Yeah, so I think Emily's just taking time to kind of think up like some sort of identity to present to the potential mentor, and she's just like sitting around, like maybe with like a notebook and pen, just like writing names out and thinking about different nicknames she's had as a kid. and just trying to like settle on some sort of like, she probably thinks of it like as a superhero identity or something. And kind of does like the thing where like if you have a crush, you like kind of write your surname with like his or write your given name with his surname after it, sort of like try it out sort of thing.
Makes sense. Like, and during this whole time, I expect Emily's also been playing around a little bit with her mage sight too.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of lesson that basically any of them would help you out with a little for free. How to be able to be better at basically turning it on, turning it off.
Oh, God, how do I turn it off?
Look at the symbols of the world, you know?
Yeah.
And see the kinds of things that it can tell you.
Oh, man, I let the matter on too long. All I can see is thread counts.
I left the death on for too long, and why did that person look a bit sick? Oh, no.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, she's probably just like sitting up in bed with a pen and like a notebook, just like messing around with names, and she kind of thinks back to what her experiences were in Stygia and how she felt, and remembers like seeing her ancestor, and like kind of like felt the connection there, and remembers what her grandmother actually called her when she was really little, because like her parents called her Emily Elizabeth, and just she's gone by that her whole childhood. But she's kind of thinking back to how her grandmother would just always say like, "Oh, she was, oh, that's my Che there," and like she knows a little bit of Vietnamese. She knows a little bit of Hmong, and like kind of like maybe Googles it and like realizes that it, like the way that her grandma wrote it out equates to whisper, and remembers how like keeping secrets about this is good, and rather than shouting your name, maybe whispering it might be a good name. So like she's like really like one of the names that she considers in her little page notebook, just like, you know, she writes over a few times, and then like the pen on the notepad is like kind of blurring Che, and it's taking like a form in front of some of these other names and identities she's considering. And then she just kind of like underlines it a few times and like puts the pen down.
And it even stands out to you under the sight, like you're writing a true word.
Exactly. A
word that is far more true than the other things around it.
Yeah, it really it's feeling a lot like when she was uttering some of those words, you know, like, oh, what were they? Like Aperon and Lunargent. Like it feels the same way as that when she says it and writes it out. So I think when she like schedules or whatever her last set of interviews or whatever, she just rather than just going through another round of questioning, I think she just goes right up to Yamaduta, like sits down and says, "Hello, I'm Che. I would like to be your apprentice."
"Okay. I am Yamaduta, and I shall teach you."
Ooh! I think she's like excited, and like I don't know, probably does like geek out a little bit that someone's willing to put up with her.
Want to find out more about the story? Join our Discord channel. The link is in the description.